You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Seattle, Washington, no longer the home of Richard Sherman.
And you've got your sad pod voice on.
I do. It's a distinct voice. It is a sad day. It's the end of an era. Seahawks are releasing or have already released. I don't know what the timetable is exactly on the official move, but Richard Sherman, in no surprises, had been rumored all week. His career with the Seahawks is coming to an end.
More on that later.
Well, yeah, maybe. That's true. His current contract with the Seahawks is coming to an end.
How are we feeling?
So I don't think I'm probably as broken up about this as you are. I mean, last year when there was Sherman trade talk, I came to terms with it pretty quickly. You sounded as if Sherman was traded, that you were no longer going to be a Seahawks fan.
I don't know if that's quite true. I don't know if I would go that far, but Richard Sherman, basically from his rookie season on, was probably my favorite Seahawk. Honestly, like if I was thinking about this, I was like, I have clothing of you're pulling out your Richard Sherman shirt. That's a Richard Sherman shirt that I bought. Don't forget that.
But some of us remembered to wear it today.
I have clothing of four Seahawks players from this current era: Marshawn Lynch, Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman, and Michael Bennett.
And that pretty much sums up this week, which also in a much less surprising move, again, still not official, but the Seahawks will trade Bennett to the Philadelphia Eagles, as we discussed on this week's pod.
And I want to talk about that later. I want to talk about Sherman first, though. So it's a sad day, right? I mean, this team, Russell Wilson is going to be the lasting player from the Seahawks team, right? From this era.
Which is why it was the wise investment was to get a Russell Wilson jersey.
But no, there's no wise investment. We have talked about this before. I just bought a Michael Bennett Christmas sweater this off season, and I will proudly wear that next year.
Yeah. Are you going to wear it to games? I mean, you wouldn't wear a sweater to games anyway.
I might though. Okay. If the situation, let's say there's a game around Christmas, I'm wearing that Michael Bennett sweater.
Okay.
Even if they were playing the Eagles, I would be wearing that sweater. But my feelings about Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman are not going to change, right? I've loved Richard Sherman from the very beginning. He embodied everything that I'm looking for in a football player. He's a player in the secondary, right? Which I've always loved. He's brash. He's outspoken. And he can back it up.
I think there's something interesting about the relationship between the city of Seattle, which is noted for its passive aggressiveness, and players like Sherman, and I would compare him to Gary Payton during the Sonics heyday in the 90s, who are these aggressive trash talkers, who both of whom very capable of backing it up on a regular basis, and became beloved by a city that kind of sees them as what they wish they could be but are not. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. We let Richard Sherman do the speaking for us.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to do it better than we are.
But do you have, in this moment, so the team initially was defined, this defense, which I think first, before we even knew that Russell Wilson would be kind of the face of the era, before then, it was the Legion of Boom, right? This defense was great all around, but they were defined first from the secondary up. I mean, when we were talking to Mina Kimes previewing the season, we didn't define who everybody on the Pelton cast was on the Seahawks offense, right? We were Legion of Boom members.
Of course. It was only fitting.
And it really goes back. You know, people talk about the Legion of Boom being broken up. It was broken up the minute Brandon Browner was gone.
I mean, true. It still retained its core identity.
It retained its core identity, but there was no fourth member of the LOB after Browner was gone. And this to me means...
I don't think that's fair to Byron Maxwell.
I just don't think after this point that we can necessarily call the secondary the Legion of Boom.
I think that is... No, not now. Not without Sherman.
We have to retire that name.
Without any of Sherman, Thomas, or Chancellor, it was no longer an intact Legion of Boom. 100% agree with that. So I think you were getting at, like, what's your favorite moment or memory?
Yes.
I mean, so I'm going to go with an oddball choice here, which is Sherman taunting Tom Brady with the "you mad bro"
after the
Patriots win, because that's kind of a moment like the Seahawks arrived. Like, they had beaten the Packers earlier that season on the Fail Mary play. But the Patriots game was like, okay, we can compete with anybody. And this team is going to be a force to be reckoned with for years to come. And it's going to have this incredible attitude to go with it.
Yeah, that was an amazing play. And beating the Patriots of all teams.
Right.
Right. It's kind of funny because to me, the best Richard Sherman games were the ones that you didn't even notice that Richard Sherman was there.
So you're saying every game against Green Bay?
Well, that was the one. So we're going to talk about the tip in a second. But the game that followed that, well, the Super Bowl is the game that followed that. The yeah. regular season game that followed that, opening on Thursday night against the Packers, where did they even throw to Richard Sherman's side of the field that entire game?
No, they did not.
They just completely ignored Richard Sherman being out there. And that was kind of the amazing thing that he was able to do, is just shut down one side of the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting thing about cornerbacks as compared to other players at other positions. Like, other than offensive line, it's hard to think of another position where you can dominate in such a quiet way. Like, the best players are the ones you don't notice because of the fact that they're not being thrown at.
When kind of what he did on the field, being able to shut down one side, meant that the Seahawks and other players like the safeties, the rest of the defense, could focus so much of their attention on the other side of the field that it kind of made it equitable, and what he did was so important because of that.
Right. I mean, it's almost difficult to break down statistically, even though his opponent's statistics are excellent, because of the fact that it's almost got to be more like a plus-minus situation in basketball where, you know, it's hard to quantify his effect on everyone else by allowing the defense to roll help to one side of the field almost exclusively.
Okay, so about the tip.
Yeah, we've been waiting.
To me, I was thinking of this morning, and I saw that Mina tweeted it already also. Probably the greatest play in Seattle sports history.
I guess the competition for that would probably be what, the double?
95 slide, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? Like, teams have won championships, but one single defining play. I mean, the Super Bowl, there's no play with a name, right?
No, I mean, there were a lot of great individual plays, but when you win 43-8, none of them can be that.
It was almost too good. I mean, we've talked about this, that the best moments in sports are moments where you don't know what's going to happen, where there's this tension. And so I was there, right?
Yeah.
NFC Championship game, Colin Kaepernick, who has been defined so differently since this moment, right? But at the time, I hated Colin Kaepernick.
It's very weird to think back on that.
Colin Kaepernick is driving the 49ers, right? Do you know what the score was at that moment?
Looks like it was 23-17.
23-17. So the 49ers are driving. This is a team that's been a thorn in the side of the Seahawks.
Oh, yeah. Arch rival.
Richard Sherman, on the other end of the field, is the coach, his college coach, who didn't see the kind of potential in him that his current coach, Pete Carroll, saw.
Yes.
Somebody who
did seem perhaps more potential in him as a wide receiver, but that's a different story altogether.
Somebody who would kind of define Richard Sherman as a nemesis, maybe even more so than the receiver who they tried to throw at.
The sorry receiver, you mean?
In the crowd, there are 72,000 clenched buttholes. Every single person is nervous in the stadium, right?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been in a moment where there was more tension at a sporting event than that moment.
Not even in the Packers game the next year?
No, because it had happened before.
Right.
Right? This is groundbreaking stuff for the Seahawks. They'd been to the Super Bowl before, but not like this.
And had not won the Super Bowl.
And the Packers game was more of a, we're claiming what's rightfully ours, and there's this amazing comeback, but there was never the same kind of tension, right? It was crisp. It was palpable in the air. Colin Kaepernick drops back to throw. We see the pass going, and then out of nowhere comes the long arm of Richard Sherman to tip the ball to Malcolm Smith and seal that the Seahawks are going to the Super Bowl, the greatest moment in Seattle sports history.
It's also just such an iconic play. Like, you can just show me the t-shirts that were made of Sherman's hand tipping the ball. Like, that alone is all you need to identify that play.
I just don't think, I mean, there's Griffey sliding. You can picture that in your mind,
yeah.
Right? But aside from that, I don't think there's anything that could be more iconic. And that's what will define Richard Sherman as a player on the Seahawks.
Maybe, but maybe there was a moment when the Metropolitans won the Stanley Cup in 1917 that we don't know about.
Not even just that, though. The thing about Richard Sherman was he couldn't just make the play to send the team to the Super Bowl. He also had to get on the mic like a wrestler and call out Michael Crabtree after. And that's what makes Richard Sherman the player who he is.
I mean, can I say one thing, by the way? This is, by the way, the most sober analysis, longtime listeners will know, that we've ever had of the 2013 NFC Championship game. Why did he call out Crabtree? It really didn't have, the play had nothing to do with Crabtree. He never even got a chance. Like, Sherman tipped the ball before he got there. It was all on Kaepernick. That's my take.
Don't you ever talk about me. Do you have any clips, by the way? So then following this, we're celebrating. I don't think there's ever been a moment where it's just like, I'm like, we need more alcohol. Like, we just need to take this night even farther. We're in an alley. Like, it's an insane time. And we podcasted in the back of your car.
And it's all
are there? Can you look to see if there are any clips that you can air from that?
I think down the road we'll look to see if we can do that. Maybe not today.
Okay. I would love to hear if there's anything that can be shared publicly.
Anything usable.
Yeah.
So this is okay.
The last thought that I have on Sherman is, I think I'm sad that it's happening. Right. I'm sad that he's being released. And we'll talk about whether there's a chance of him coming back in a second. But the thing that I do appreciate is that there's a steep decline that happens with all football players, but especially with cornerbacks. Yes. And I think it's kind of cool that we're not having to see the steep decline in front of us. We basically never saw a bad Richard Sherman.
Yeah.
Like, he was still having an excellent season up until the moment he was injured in Arizona.
This is still you trying to talk bad about Ichiro, isn't it?
What?
Because we're having to see a steep decline with Ichiro this year.
No, if we were doing an Ichiro pod, we probably would have said the same thing.
In 2012?
Yeah.
We wouldn't have been wrong.
And who knows? Maybe Richard Sherman will come back and we will see that. But I think seeing him at the peak of his abilities, we don't have to be there and just feel bad that Richard Sherman isn't as good as he once was. Because it's frustrating to watch. It's a difficult thing to see, both for the player and his fans. We want Richard Sherman to be the player who had the tip. You know, this amazing defender who could shut down any receiver in the game, say all the words, and back it up.
So should we talk about this as a football decision for a minute here, as opposed to Sherman's legacy? Is there an argument that it did make sense for the Seahawks to keep Sherman at a $13-plus million cap hit for next season, coming off Achilles surgery?
You tell me.
I think probably not. I mean, just to say nothing of his ability, but just because of the nature of that injury and as debilitating as it is. And obviously, I know it better in basketball, where it probably has the most impact on player performance of any injury. It's the toughest to come back from of any common injury. But I can't imagine it's any different for a football player, especially at cornerback.
And an older player also.
Right. And then, you know, the possibility that, I mean, I guess, you know, he's on track to be ready for training camp, but still the possibility of missed time. I mean, all of that. It's hard to justify a $13 million cap hit, the $11 million net, for someone who, or for a team rather, that has the cap problems that the Seahawks have.
Yep. I agree. I don't. It's tough. Like, when this happened, I'm not happy about it, right? But it just makes sense.
In some ways, I think it makes a lot more sense than trading Michael Bennett.
I want to talk about that in 1 second. But okay. First, is there any chance that Richard Sherman comes back at a lower cap number? Yes. The other thing is, there's a very good chance. If I can make a bold prediction right now, we have not seen Richard Sherman play his last game in Seattle as a Seahawk.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's reasonable.
Because also, the Seahawks are very willing to do what fans always want them to do and bring back players who were previously on the team.
Oh, there's a lot of fan service in that regard. There's no doubt about it.
A long lineage of it, but
how many times did they bring back Kristen Michael? So many times.
I mean, when Richard Sherman, let's say that he does sign with another team this offseason, when he's inevitably released or becomes a free agent or whatever as he gets older, at some point, every single person is going to tweet at Bob Condotta asking if the Seahawks are going to bring back Richard Sherman. And one of those days, they're going to.
And Condotta is going to quote tweet every single one of those replies to him. God bless him.
So this isn't necessarily the end of Richard Sherman in Seattle forever.
So Sherman is obviously on a different level than guys like Maxwell and Brandon Browner for the reasons we just articulated, and Jeremy Lane, who will also be released today. He wasn't the one benefiting from all that help on the other side, and that's part of, I think, why they look so much better in Seattle than they did elsewhere. But the Seahawks, you know, philosophy with cornerbacks is different than other teams in the league. If you're going somewhere where you're being asked to play a different style, particularly coming off this Achilles injury, it's likely he's going to be less effective. And again, that track record may mean teams just value him less, even though he's clearly so much better than these other corners.
Well, if it wasn't 10:42 a.m., I would say we'd pour one out for Richard Sherman right now.
But the whole point is we shouldn't necessarily pour one out because it's not necessarily over.
Still,
yet.
We should pour one out for this era of Richard Sherman, right?
We should.
He's one of the defining figures of the most important era in Seahawks history, which may have been the most important era of any professional sports team in Seattle history.
I mean, today isn't the day for this. Another day is appropriate, but it would be interesting debate whether he is the defining figure or whether it's Pete Carroll or Russell Wilson or Marshawn Lynch. I guess you could make that case as well. But for now, let's get to the other move that happened this week. So we talked about a Michael Bennett trade in the abstract on this week's podcast, but did not know exactly what such a trade might look like. And we now know that he is headed to the Philadelphia Eagles, with the Seahawks also sending out a 7th-round pick and getting back a 5th-round pick and wide receiver Marcus Johnson. So what do we think of this?
Pretty much the same as we talked about previously on the podcast. I didn't really care what team he goes to. It kind of feels a little bit uncomfortable sending him to the Super Bowl champion, also in the NFC.
Yes. I mean, so an interesting point of discussion, there's been a lot of talk about the offer that came in late from the Patriots, who were willing to send the Seahawks a 3rd-round pick in exchange for getting Bennett in a 5th. The difference between those two trades is not as dramatic as I think it sounds. So I asked Bill Barnwell about this when he was tweeting about it. What's kind of the difference in terms of value between those two trades? In other words, how much would you have to value Marcus Johnson as part of this trade to make it an even match, the Eagles offer versus the Patriots offer? And he replied that it's basically an early 7th-round pick if you look at the Chase Stewart, you know, actual value each pick provides to you. So, I mean, I think it's reasonably plausible that he could be that valuable if they see him as a special teams contributor.
And this wasn't just the Seahawks trolling the Patriots like people predicted, and we wanted to imagine it was.
No, I don't want to imagine that. I don't want to imagine the Seahawks taking less value just to troll another team.
I don't want to see Michael Bennett playing for the Patriots. My feelings about this would be very different if he were traded to the Patriots. But the question that we have to ask about Michael Bennett, with Richard Sherman, it was clear that there were savings. He's coming off an injury. The right. chances of him being significantly worse next season than he was this season or the previous year are very high, right? The money was a bigger deal there. For Michael Bennett, the money wasn't that big of a deal. The chances of him, at least statistically with sacks, of improving next year are pretty good. You still have to ask the question of why did this happen?
And I think the question probably ties a lot to the locker room. I mean, it's certainly interesting that Sherman and Bennett, the two most outspoken players in that locker room, are not, well, I mean, again, Sherman might be back, so that colors the discussion in a certain way. But with Bennett, I think it's harder to draw the conclusion that this doesn't have to do with, you know, him as a person in the locker room rather than him as a player on the field. And I don't think that has anything to do with anthem protests or, you know, his comments about police brutality in the wake of his arrest in Las Vegas. I don't think those are an issue necessarily. I think it's more about just, you know, fitting in the locker room. But this is the downside, by the way. We should point out at some point, Richard Sherman did not always follow Pete Carroll's core rule to protect the team. You have no comment on this? You're unwilling to say anything about this?
Just letting you talk. I guess I probably agree with you. I mean, it feels like it goes against Pete Carroll's stance that he wants to let the players be themselves.
I mean, there's always a line there, which is the line of protecting the team. And again, we don't know what goes on in the locker room and how that manifests itself. But I do think that there was more than production at play here with Bennett.
Okay. It's just frustrating to hear. I mean, Michael Bennett was beloved.
But it's also, it's not like this is, you know, oh, this guy is too big of a headache coming off of a year where they won the Super Bowl. It's coming off of a year where they massively underachieved relative to expectations and talent on the roster.
Michael Bennett was beloved in the city of Seattle and nowhere else in the rest of the state of Washington.
I don't know about that.
was a good player and didn't have a big cap number. It's still just a frustrating move to look at from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Maybe he struggles this season, and then the Seahawks have gotten out of the, you know, cap hit that they would have owed him in 2019 with the remainder of his bonus had they moved on at that point, and it looks better in hindsight. But at this point, it seems like the Eagles got the better of that trade with the Seahawks.
Yes, and I still think the Seahawks have a bit of, they have value issues, right? They tend to overpay for players when they're trading for them, and they tend to undersell players when they're trading them.
I don't know if they undersell players when they're trading them. I don't know that Bennett actually had that much trade value. I mean, this is, like I said, this is about what I expected. I predicted on the pod this week a sixth in 2019 that would convert to a fifth based on playing time, which I think is pretty similar
maybe,
to what
maybe
they
maybe not undersell players when they're trading them, I suppose, but trading them at times when their value has gone down to
so
near zero.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. So, Martin, anything else to say about today, this week, what's to come?
We were lucky to have experienced this period.
Oh, of course.
Right? Most fans of most teams don't ever necessarily in their entire lives get to experience a period of such sustained success, such outspoken and personality, like strong personality players. They don't get to experience a team that was so likable as the Seahawks, again, in the city of Seattle and nowhere else in the rest of the country. They don't get to see this for this long, especially with a defense like that. And we were lucky to have seen it. We were lucky. We should be thankful to John Schneider and Pete Carroll that they were able to put together this defense and put together the Legion of Boom. See Richard Sherman as, he's a sixth round pick, or is he undrafted?
No, he was drafted. I think six is right.
To see Richard Sherman as a sixth round pick, a converted wide receiver from Stanford, recognize his potential, get him in there playing as a rookie,
yeah,
and then nurture him and develop him into being someone who at various points was probably the best cornerback in the NFL and a fixture.
Fifth round.
A fifth round pick and a fixture in the best secondary in the NFL for years, multiple years, right? This wasn't Jalen Ramsey being drafted with a top five pick.
No.
This was, they recognized Richard Sherman in the fifth round and managed to turn him into a player who was able to succeed at the level he was able to succeed at. It was an impressive thing that they did. We were lucky to have seen it. And we're lucky with all of the defensive players, because eventually Bobby Wagner will move on, Earl Thomas will move on, Cam Chancellor may move on this summer. We were lucky to have seen it with all of them. We should be thankful for that. And I'm excited to see what happens next.
It's difficult to come to terms with the decline of the Seahawks defense. And I understand, I think we would have all liked it to go on longer and hoped that it would, given the ages of the players there. But, you know, unless you're the Patriots, that's not the nature of the NFL. Like, dynasties fade very quickly. And again, I agree with you that instead of being unhappy that, you know, maybe not all the right moves were made to sustain the success the Seahawks had, we should be glad that they had the success that they did for the period of time that they did, because that was not a guarantee. That is not normal or typical. And it spoils people, I think, into thinking that that's normal. All right. Well, on that note, thanks for listening to this somber special edition of the Pelton Cast.
And thanks to Richard Sherman for everything that he gave to the city of Seattle.
Thanks, Sherman.
Thanks.